today we're talking about breaking free from food cravings and unhelpful habits. So today's theme is standing firm, standing humbly, standing together, and standing up for righteousness. And like a couple of you said, you haven't perhaps involved God in this part of your journey before. And that's what we want to do. He cares about every area of our lives. And if it's bothering us, if it's causing us problems, if it's meaning we're not living free in freedom and in the way that he desires, then he totally cares about it. Okay, so I'm just going to pray for us before we kick in properly. Lord, thank you for bringing these wonderful people here today. I pray that you will speak to them and they will hear your voice, and that they will step closer to having freedom in this area. So yeah, please, Lord, help me to say the words you want me to say. Amen. Okay, so motivation, willpower. How often have you said, I just don't have the motivation? I just don't have the willpower. There's a few nods. And you might think that someone else has more motivation, more willpower. But motivation and willpower only really gets you a certain distance. And when we're faced with other things in our environment, you need an awful lot of motivation and willpower. And that's what cravings do. They make it harder for us to have this strong motivation and this strong willpower. And the definition of a craving is to have a very strong feeling of wanting something. And we talked yesterday about emotional eating being an emotional urge. Cravings are actually a physical urge. So they're not emotional eating. They are a physiological, physical urge. It's not normal physical hunger. It's different to that. So normal physical hunger, it appears slowly. You don't suddenly think, I'm starving. You get that sense that you're getting hungry, but you could probably wait an hour if you needed to, hour and a half, but you get a bit hungrier. Your stomach feels empty, starts rumbling, you might feel a little bit lightheaded, and you desire just your next meal, really, your next meal or your next snack. It's not specific. And then when you've eaten, your body responds, you're satisfied, and you feel no guilt about eating. So that's normal physical hunger. But with cravings, a bit like emotional eating, they appear quickly. And you crave only certain foods. Again, you probably won't be craving your sauerkraut. Although, to be honest, sometimes you might. I sometimes crave things like that now. But it probably more likely would be starchy, salty, crisp, chocolate, all that kind of thing. And again, it can occur even after you've only recently eaten. So you're not physically hungry, but it feels like a physical urge. And it's something going on in your body. It's something that your body seems to be needing. And there's lots of different reasons why we crave. So we've got hormones, pregnancy, a result of restrictive eating. So that's really key. If you're too restrictive in your eating, then your body will be trying to get you to eat more variety, and you might crave things. You might eat for energy or because you're tired. I definitely remember in those early days of being a mum, that 3 o'clock sat reading on the sofa and just that unbearable tiredness where you felt like a biscuit was the answer. And sometimes I went for the biscuit, other times I thought, no, actually what I really need is a glass of water and to do 10 burpees or run around the garden. And I remember my son used to stare at me weirdly because I'd sometimes get up and do something crazy just to get the blood flowing. It could be a message to your body about what it needs, particularly if you're not having that variety or if you're pregnant. It could be dehydration. A lot of the time when we're not hydrated enough, our body's crying out for water, but we get it a little bit mixed up for something else, particularly around the tiredness, that kind of thing. I've said about not enough variety, but the big ones, response to sensory stimuli. So adverts, walking past shops, at the supermarket, seeing someone else eat something, someone else talking about something, and the sugar cycle and the UPF cycle. So UPF is ultra processed foods, and we'll come on to those a bit. So we're not going to talk about hormones or pregnancy. There's not a lot we can do about those in this session. But we will talk a little bit about the other things. So you've got these internal influences. So these things that are going on inside your body. So the internal is eating for energy, tiredness, sending a message to your body about what it actually needs, being dehydrated and not enough variety. And then the external things are the response to these outside stuff, the stimuli, the sugar cycle, the ultra processed food cycle. Because over the last 50 years, things have changed an awful lot. Some of you probably remember pre-freezers even, or pre-ready meals, pre-processed foods, and things have changed an awful lot. Our movement has gone down for a start. We have remote controls for everything, including this. We don't have to move as much. We go to places called gyms, which I think if you'd have said to someone 100 years ago, there'll be these buildings where you can go and you can walk on machines and you can run if you want to and you can like lift and carry things and you can like turn and twist. They'd be like, we do that anyway. And we've pretty much inconvenienced ourselves out of exercise, haven't we? So now I find living in the countryside is a bit crazy, really, because you'd think living in the countryside you'd be a bit healthier, but actually you have to drive everywhere and you have to be very intentional about your movement. We've inconvenienced ourselves out of lots of things like exercise and eating well because we've created all these convenience things. So it is a bit crazy. But that's what happens, and that's the society we now live in. So we've got all these external influences, and we've got a lot of sugar around us. And there's this thing called the sugar cycle. So I'm not sure if you can read that. Yeah, probably can, but I'll read it out as well. So you start here. You eat sugar. You enjoy it. It makes you feel good. Your blood sugar spikes. Insulin gets released to bring that spike down. And it stores the sugar as fat. So that's a good thing. It's storing it as fat to get it out of your bloodstream because sugar is dangerous in the bloodstream. So it stores what it can in liver and muscle, but that's limited. So then it goes to fat stores. That's normal. Obviously, it depends on the amounts it's storing, but that's a normal thing to do. But then your sugar levels drop. And then you feel like you need a bit of a sugar hit again. And so the cycle goes on. The more sugar you eat, the more the crashes, and the more you feel like you want to eat. And our brain loves the sugar hit. It loves it. And unfortunately, our brain doesn't really get the bit that happens afterwards. It just gets that immediate hit. So our brain thinks we feel really good when we eat sugar. We know if we use our adult brain that actually longer term, bigger picture, we might not feel that great if we eat sugar. But the initial chemistry in our brain suggests and says sugar's good, you like sugar. So that's the cycle we struggle with. So that's what I mean when I say it's not all down to your motivation, your willpower. We live in an obesogenic society, and actually if you are maintaining your weight or losing weight even, congratulations. It is tough out there. It is a hard society to live in, and we do have to go against the tide a little bit. Yep. Possibly. I haven't read that and I'm not sure, but it would be possible because sugar didn't, as you'll see what I'm about to say, sugar didn't really exist in that way, so possibly didn't need to, so yes. And when we were, a long time ago, when we were like hunter-gatherers and everything, then we needed to eat sugar because where was sugar found? In fruit and in vegetables. So we needed to eat those things. And so our brain knows to make us want to eat sugar. It's just got confused by the overprocessedness of sugar. So the key really, it's a boring answer, I'm afraid, is to eat more fruit and veg for the natural sweetness, more protein to fill you up, more healthy fats and more complex carbohydrates. And less sugar. So it's a bit of a chicken and egg situation. And at some point you need to just think, I'm just gonna back off the sugar a little bit, and you'll probably find it gets easier after a couple of days. It's important to look at where your energy comes from. So God made plants get their energy from the sun, from water, and from carbon dioxide takes me right back. Does anyone remember their kind of photosynthesis lessons? I even remember the picture I drew and coloured in and had some new coloured pencils. And it's weird. I wonder if kids nowadays remember in such detail stuff because they've got so much stuff. But I really remember those pencils. Anyway, so off the point. So plants are our energy too. So they get their energy from these things. We get our energy from plants. So we get our energy from carbohydrates. And I didn't actually realize till I was a grown up that carbohydrates are called carbohydrates because they're carbon dioxide and hydrogen. Did you know that? That is amazing, isn't it? It's one of those things you learn. There's stuff like OXO cubes, how you're meant to open them, and there's all these different things you discover, aren't there, when you're grown up, you never knew. OXO cubes, yeah, it's some weird thing that you don't have to tear it and it gets all bitter, you just squash it. Yeah, there you go. I could do another seminar on tips. Tips I learnt as a grown-up. Okay, so whilst we do get energy from protein and healthy fats as well, that's a bit more of a complex process, but our body does get energy from those things. So don't believe that you don't store protein and fat, healthy fats as fats, because you do if there's too much of them. So you do get your energy from these things too, but mostly from carbohydrates, from these plants. So all these plants that God created to give us energy, they have lots of one thing in, fiber. Okay, and this fiber coupled with the energy is really important. So God knew that we needed energy, but we also needed fiber. And fiber is really good for us. It's really good for our gut. It's really good for cholesterol, our blood pressure, loads of stuff. It's really good for us. But have you ever tried putting strawberries or lettuce in a freezer and then defrosting them? Fiber doesn't last. It's not very good for shelf life. So when you go to a supermarket, all these things that have shelf lives, they don't have much fiber in them because fiber isn't good for storage. Okay, so what happens is all these carbohydrates don't have fiber in. So when you hear that carbohydrates are bad for you, that's not the case. Ultra processed carbohydrates, they'd be a choice for enjoyment. They wouldn't be a choice for health because they don't have fiber in. The fiber has gone down, probably to zero in most things, I would say. And the sugar has gone up massively. There's lots of different sugars. There's sucrose, there's glucose, there's fructose. Don't worry too much about all of that. Your brain deals with most of them in the same way, and it gets that hit when we eat those kind of foods. And in nature, like I said, we were designed to eat fruit, and fruit wasn't readily available really, so when we did see it, we needed to eat it. And it's a bit like Charlie in the Chocolate Factory. He had that one chocolate bar that lasted him a year, and that was such a treat. And some of you probably remember rationing and not having much sweet stuff at all. And it was a real treat, and it was lovely and to be enjoyed. But now we have 10, 20 teaspoons a day a lot of the time, and that really was not how it was intended. And fruit has fructose in, but it's not the kind of fructose you read on the back of packets. So fructose in fruit has also got lots of other stuff. So it's got all the fiber, it's got all the cell walls, it takes a long time to break down, but it's not a tenth as sweet as fructose you read on the packet. So what manufacturers have done are taken fructose and made it a lot sweeter and a lot more intense, and not a way we were ever meant to eat it. So never think fruit have bad sugars in or anything. They don't, and they've got an awful lot of other things that are good for you. The problem is the processed, manufactured sugars. So it's no wonder, really, that we struggle a little bit with motivation when we have these sugars hitting our brain all the time. And also, sugar makes you feel tired. I don't know if you've experienced that. You have some sugar and then you get the afternoon slump. And for some of you, afternoon slumps are probably a regular afternoon occurrence, possibly every day. And that's very connected to sugar. So when we have sugar, it does give us a bit of energy. But when we have too much sugar, we also have too much insulin. So remember, insulin has to be released to store the sugar. And it's a little bit like an engine in a train. So you've got the engine and this sugar is being shoveled in to keep the train going, but there's too much sugar. The engine person can't actually shovel any in. It gets overwhelmed and your body doesn't then utilize the energy properly because there's too much sugar, there's too much insulin going on. And the problem with insulin is it's a one-way street. So when you've got insulin in your body, it can store fat, that's what it does, but you can't burn fat while there's insulin in your body. So when you're eating lots of sugar, you're just never giving your body a chance to burn fat either. So there's other things. You may have heard of a lady called the glucose goddess. I don't know if anyone heard of her. No. So she's a scientist, she's a biochemist. And she was part of the development of the continuous glucose monitors that people can wear on their arms with diabetes now, so don't have to do pinpricks but can read it continuously. And she's done lots of studies wearing these continuous glucose monitors to see what happens when regular people without diabetes eat certain foods and the response in their blood sugars, etc. So there are some other things scientifically proven that you can do to lessen the impact of food on your blood sugar levels. But only do these things if they're not rules, if they're just easy to follow and you do them when you can. So you can eat foods in a more helpful order. So imagine if your stomach is a bowl and if you put the more sugary stuff first, it's going to dissipate and there's a funnel at the bottom, it's just going to go straight down the funnel and into your system straight away. But if you layer some other stuff in there, like greens, vegetables, proteins, fats, healthy carbohydrates, then the sugar takes a bit longer to get into your bloodstream. So you can look at the order that you eat foods, and if you've got some food on your plate, then you can maybe eat your greens first, some protein and stuff, before you eat the more sugary things. You can add a green starter to all your meals, that will slow things down. You can try not to have a sugary breakfast, because if you have a sugary breakfast, that can set you up on a bit of a spike crash all day. So have a more savory breakfast or have something like oats with yogurt, that kind of thing. And picking a dessert over a sweet snack. So if you have a sweet snack that's standalone, then that's going to spike your blood sugar. Whereas if you have the same thing, but after dinner or after lunch, then it won't, because there's already stuff in your stomach. But again, don't let this be rules or anything, but just things to realize, or actually there are things you can do. And also vinegar is very good for lessening the impact on blood sugar. So either sprinkle it onto your food, onto your salad, or having a tablespoon in water about 20 minutes to 0 minutes before a meal. Apple cider vinegar is the best tasting vinegar. So you could do that, but again, don't let these be rules. After you eat, move. So when we sit down after we eat, sugar is more likely to end up as fat, because if we move, then our muscles need it. But this isn't going for a run or anything. This is just clearing up, going up and down the stairs a couple of times. That kind of thing will help your muscles to absorb the sugar rather than your body to store it as fat. And if you must snack and you're out and about, then if you're in one of my lecturers, I did a master's in clinical nutrition, and one of the lecturers said a good definition of processed food is stuff you can buy in a petrol station. So if we're out and about and you end up in a petrol station and you're really hungry and you need something, then it's slightly better to go savory than sweet, because the sweet stuff has probably got quite high levels of this artificial fructose in, and that cannot be burnt off. That will get stored as fat. And then put some clothes on your carbohydrates. So if you're having quite a lot of carbohydrates, and if you have some fat with it, or some protein with it, or some green salad with it, then that will help the release as well. But again, don't let these be rules. If you're interested in that area, then look up the glucose goddess. She's got some great graphs and great research about the impact. Okay, then ultra processed foods. So at the end, I'll give you a link that you can download this checklist if you want it. But the definition of ultra-processed food is pretty much stuff you can buy in a petrol station. But it's stuff where you just don't recognize some of the ingredients, or there's perhaps more than about five or six ingredients. And it will usually feature one of these things if it's ultra-processed. And this is a new area of research, but lots of research is being done now in the impact of ultra-processed foods on our health, not just on our weight at all, but on our health and on our gut health and on our brain health. And there's been lots of programs about it. You might have seen some. Those twins, I never pronounce their name, the twin doctors who do lots of stuff on the BBC and things, they've done studies, and you might have remembered one of them ate McDonald's or fast food for about a month. And he put on weight, obviously. All his biomarkers, all his health markers went up or down. He got worse in all those areas, but the most amazing thing was a change in his brain. It rewired itself to want these things. And he is a doctor. He was healthy before he did this, but he himself found it really hard to get back on track and to lose the weight and to get healthy again, because his brain, he could see it was disgusting, some of this stuff he was eating, but his brain loved it. And it was rewired to really want this stuff. So one of the biggest things you can do is just try and avoid ultra-processed food as much as possible, because we don't know the full impact of it on our health. And it's certainly not great for your weight either. They have done studies where they've had this two people eat the same amount of calories and the same breakup of macronutrients and micronutrients, but one has had an ultra-processed food diet. And one has had a natural food diet, and the natural food diet hasn't put on the weight the ultra processed person has, and everything else has changed as well in their health. So, ultra processed food is something to avoid as much as you can, and just recognize if you have it for enjoyment, great, enjoy it, but also just be aware so that you can make the choice and you can get into that ultra processed food cycle, and you'll just want more and more. The more starchy, sugary, salty food you have, the more you want. There's a reason why Pringles had that tagline. I think once you pop, you can't stop, things like that. And we know it's true, don't we? There's certain foods that are like that for us. And it does, like I say, it rewires the brain. So it's no wonder we need all this motivation and willpower. But the key things to do are have a variety, have no restriction. So whilst I say avoid ultra-processed foods if you can, you don't want to say no ultra-processed foods, because you will want ultra-processed foods. So include the ones you like. That's the key, really, is give the ones a miss that you don't like and you can't even tell what they are. But if there's stuff you like, incorporate those so that you don't feel deprived, you don't feel restrictive, your body doesn't start craving things, and keep hydrated. It's a bit boring, isn't it, talking about water? And it's something I don't struggle when I'm talking, but the rest of the time, I think we all cannot drink enough water sometimes, but it is key, is important. So, variety, just for fun. There's 17 foods here. I'll read them out in case you can't read them. I want you to see how many of these you've had in the last month. So there's 17. We've got walnuts, chickpeas, aubergine, runner beans, blueberries, pinto beans, red grapes, orange pepper, green lentils, soybeans, tomato, sunflower seeds, orange, butter beans, mange tout, avocado, apple. Okay, so did anyone score 17? 16? Oh, there's some 17s and 16s. 15, 14, 13, 12, 11, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. So obviously that was completely random selection. That does not reflect the variety of your diet. But I do sometimes, if you follow me on Facebook or you're on Motivation Fish, I do sometimes put random bingos up like that, which is quite fun just to give you a check. Yeah? But what can be good to think is when you have a walnut, have a Brazil nut too. When you have a bit of orange pepper, have a bit of red pepper too. When you have some sunflower seeds, have some pumpkin seeds too. When you have baked beans, water them down with a tin of plain beans and pop them in. You can get mixed baked beans now, can't you, which is quite good, but I'd still recommend watering them down with another can as well. And if you have a bit of orange, have half an orange, half an apple. It's that kind of thing, increasing the variety. Ideally, we should be eating 30 plant foods a week. So just try and think, okay, a good way of doing it with nuts is to buy mixed nuts and then just have one of each. So you've got about 8 nuts then as a good portion. So you might hear about people who have this amazing overnight success, but in reality, do they? They've probably worked very hard. There's lots of people who suddenly make it big time on the telly, but they've had years of probably doing the circuit of comedy clubs or music clubs or whatever it is. Athletes obviously work very hard. And success is a product of daily habits. You may have read a book called Atomic Habits by James Clear, so some of this stuff you might recognize, but I love his quote that says, "You do not rise to the level of your goals, but you fall to the level of your systems." So the goal isn't really important if you don't have the structure to get to it. It's more about the systems that you have in place. And your habits are the system. They're the building blocks. And your building blocks get you to where you want to go. And like I said right at the beginning, it's much easier to add in positive habits and take away negative ones. So think about having a can-do attitude. What can you do? All of us leaving here can do something positive this evening for our health. So what can you do? Don't always be thinking about what you need to take away, but what can you add in? What can you add? Can you add walnuts to your nut mix? Can you add a red pepper to your weekly shop? What can you do? And every small decision adds up to a bigger one over time, and your habits today make tomorrow's habits easier. So when I've only done, I'm not really a natural runner at all, but I have done a couple of longer runs, just a couple of half marathons, and I remember the runs in the middle of the week were short, but they helped the weekend run. And every time you do a habit, it makes the next time you do it easier. So they build up. You probably would all love for me to give you this magic secret today that no one else has discovered, and you were hoping you come to the third seminar and you got it. Yes, it's sorted. But there is no magic pill. Habits are actually the magic pill. So you need to make your goal progress, not perfection. So we're not aiming at perfection. All you need to do is each day just put one foot in front of the other and tiny steps. I like to think about habit change as this kind of bucket chain. I'm not sure of the proper word, but you probably know when you've got that kind of waterfall and it tips into the top bucket, tips over, bottom, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so you've got number one bucket at the bottom, which is the stuff you're already doing. So in this room, you have healthy default behaviors already. So you can probably all think of something that you do easily that's good for you. Might be brushing your teeth, might be having a shower, it might be drinking water, it might be going for daily walk, whatever it is. It's just your default, it's you, it doesn't need any thought, it happens. And then you've got those things that are actually pretty easy to do, but you need a little bit of a reminder sometimes. So it might be a post-it note, it might be an alarm on your phone, it might be a friend calling you, whatever it is. So those are the first things to work on, those ones that actually are really easy. You just don't always do them. Things like water, to be honest, there's no great hardship. Some of you possibly don't like water, but in general, there's no great hardship to drinking more water, is there? We just need a bit of a reminder sometimes. So those are the habits you want to start with. Those ones that you have done in the past are not really hard, but you just need a bit of... Is that a hand up there? So on average, the recommendation is 2 litres, but obviously it depends on the weather and depends what activity you do, but roughly 2 litres, so that's 500, so 4 of those. Okay, so those are the ones you want to pick first that you've done in the past, they're easy to do. And then you can move on to the slightly more tricky ones that might take a bit of work. And then there'll be habits in bucket number four that you don't get to for a long time, or maybe even ever. So they stay there. You don't want to tackle things that just, giving up chocolate or stopping. They just might never happen and they're not appropriate for you to tackle. So they can stay there. You can focus on the other buckets. So you have to have capacity to make habit changes. You have to have capacity. So if life is manic, life is crazy, you're stressed, whatever, it might not be the time to take on some big habit changes. So you have to have capacity. So maybe just work on the smaller things first. And it has to be weighty enough. So to tip down that bucket chain, it has to be important to you. It has to be something that bigger picture you want and you want to do. You're not just doing it because you're being told to do it and that you want to do it. So what are the first habits that you would like to work on? What can you think of that could be those tiny transformational tweaks as you go from here? And that's the biggest thing, really. It needs to become your way of living, your default behavior. And so it's important that you just do one thing. Or you can do up to three things at a time, those little things. So some of the things I'm working on now, for example, like I mentioned before, I don't get much movement sometimes in my day. So when I drop my son at school, I now don't walk the short way back, but walk the long way back. And that was a habit I introduced, and 2 weeks later it stuck, and that's just an automatic reaction now. So things like that. I did still drink fizzy drinks in one Diet Coke a day until about 10 months ago, maybe a year ago. And so that was one of my last habits that I changed in the kind of eating realm. And I swapped to sparkling water, and then gradually sparkling water is now just something occasionally. So you just pick one thing and work on it just until it becomes natural. And consistency is key, really. So consistency develops routines and it builds momentum. You're not always starting over. Have you ever tried to get in a cold swimming pool or the sea, and everyone who's already in is saying, "Oh, it's lovely when you're in," and you're like, "Yeah, but I'm not in." And it's like you put a toe in, and then you go up to your knee, then you go, "Ooh," then you go up, and you get further and further. And yeah, when you're in, you just think, "Why didn't I just go for it?" But imagine if you did that, you came out again, then you went in again, then you came out and in again. So it's hard to start. Is the point. It's hard to start sometimes. So if you can just keep going, even if that's like saying that you're going to walk 30 minutes a day, but actually you do 2 minutes some days, that's okay. Just keep it going, keep the habit going. But what about if you don't, if you break it? That's okay too. We're looking at our bigger picture, the average speed. When you're going on a journey, you don't get to a red light and think, "Oh no, I'm going home now. This is pointless. I'm just going back." It's your average speed that matters, okay? So just keep going. Okay, just a few things really. All diet and exercise programs will get you to try and make changes, but a lot of them, as you've discovered, are just putting that sticking plaster over really, and we need to undo things and for it to become our default behavior, which is a bit of a battle, but it is possible to reset. It takes time, but does it matter if it takes a year or 2 years if you then have freedom in this area rather than going around the same things all the time? So take your time and make this gradual and do those tiny transformational tweaks. And what you can do is really enhance your internal and external environments for success with cravings and habit change. We've talked a little bit about changing our internal environment so our bodies aren't craving as much from the inside. But what about your external environment? What happens when you walk into the kitchen? What's the first thing that you see? What's the first thing that you see when you open your fridge or open your cupboard? Can make it easier for yourself. Hide things, put things in tins, put things on top shelves. What's your environment looking like? What's helpful for you? How can you turn up healthy noise and healthy things that you do and that surround you and turn down unhelpful noise? For those of you who shop online, it's a bit easier, isn't it, to stick to what you've got on your list. When you go into a supermarket, it's harder. There's lots of things around. So how can you look at your own environment? How can you make things easier for you to be healthier? And how can you take away those obstacles that make it harder? James Clear talks about these things. If you want to introduce healthy habits, then make it more obvious. So bottle of water on your desk, make it attractive. It might be that you put a bit of fruit in your water, or you give yourself a nice new bottle with lemons on or something like that. You make it easy. I'm not sure how you can make drinking water easier. Maybe I could have a lid that doesn't need unscrewing all the time. Maybe I could have one of those straw lids. Make it satisfying. So you could have some kind of jar on your desk where every time you take a sip of water, you put a paper clip in it, and it's lovely to see all the paper clips add up. So how can you do those things to turn up these healthy noises, and then to turn down unhelpful noise, make it less obvious? Put it to the back of the cupboard, make it less attractive. You do hear about some people who put washing up liquid all over their leftovers as soon as they've had them, or put them in the bin straight away or whatever. How can you make it harder to do those less helpful things and make it less satisfying? Okay, so just a few thoughts really, and maybe that's something to think about, is your environment as you go home. Is it helping you? Is it hindering you? What's your internal environment like? How can you make sure that you've got enough variety, you're not restricting yourself, you're hydrated enough, and that you're eating mainly natural foods to help? And then what about your immediate surroundings and the people you surround yourself with and the things that you read and what your kitchen looks like, etc. Okay, so in summary, we have cravings that come from the outside and come from the inside, and we can give our bodies a better chance of fighting cravings by eating a natural variety, staying hydrated, and not restricting ourselves. Habits are actually the magic pill. Habits should be tweaked slowly, and we can enhance our environment to help. Okay,